I was tripping on the break because I said this thing about McDonald's updating their signs when I was a kid. And I felt like when I was saying that, I was like, I'm 1,000 years old. I remember that. So I actually looked at this. McDonald's used to update their numbers on their roadside signs to show a running tally of total hamburgers sold, starting at 1 million in 1955 and then climbing over the decades. They hit 20 billion in 1976, 50 billion in 1984, 80 billion in 1990. The running count stopped and froze at over 99 billion around 93 or 94. And then they had an annual convention, the annual McDonald's convention in 1994, and they decided to replace the updating digits with a static text that read billions and billions served. There you go.
That's what it actually says now?
It says billions
and billions.
Dude, I remember it. Like, there was one on Tim Murray may know this. Tim Murray joins us now, courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line.
McDonald's locations in Washington, D.C.
That's exactly what's going to happen. There is a McDonald's. Tim, you know, East-West Highway between Bethesda and Silver Spring, there's McDonald's there.
Yeah.
The one we used to pass. And it would always go with like 35 billion, 40 billion. It used to update. Tim, by the way, the host of VSiN Primetime, the co-host of VSiN Primetime. And listen, it's all about college football with Timmy because he's got the VSiN College Football Tailgate Show and the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. Follow him on Twitter at one Tim Murray. You remember that one, huh? East West Highway.
I do. Yeah, you were closer to the city than I was. I was in Rockville, so I was a little bit further back. I remember the day that Cabin John Mall switched from Roy Rogers to McDonald's. That was a sad day. I was a sad day. I was a big fan of the
Double R Bar Burger, man.
Get a couple drumsticks, and then you go to the Fixin' Bar and just load up on pickles.
See, Matty Humans doesn't know anything about Roy Rogers. Huh. He doesn't know about that.
He probably does.
Does he?
It's Gold Rush.
I've never been.
I started working
at
Frederickville a couple years, I guess 15, 16 years ago. They still had Roy Rogers. That was a big day when I started working for the Frederick Keys and I could go to Roy Rogers for lunch.
So there are apparently a few Roy Rogers still around.
Didn't we just look this up recently?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It was the Double R Burger. Yeah. Oh, so good. All right, Tim. Again, I've asked this about all college football folks. You learn anything from week zero? Anything?
Yeah, a little bit. UNC's not as bad as we thought. I think defensively that they're a capable bunch. I think people overlooked that they had a pretty good defense last year. They just enjoyed ragging on them. Certainly I did as well. But the defense is capable. Schedule's really challenging. But I think UNC probably a bowl team, you know, in that discussion as opposed to, you know, where their win total was. Memphis, you don't want to try to overreact too much, but I think they're a legitimate contender for the bid to the college football playoff from the G6. And, you know, I'm going to monitor North Dakota State here. I was a little bit lower on them, still a little bit hesitant to jump full in to the deep end here on North Dakota State, but they looked the part, very athletic, certainly had the size, but they still have to go on the road to the perceived top four teams in the Mountain West, but I'm not going to take too much away. Look, USC's got studs as freshmen. They won by 16. Score's very misleading. They're up 35-3. They took their foot off the gas. So if you laid the chalk with USC or took their team total over, I know that was a loser for you, but I'm not going to take too much away from USC in what was truly a preseason game. The crowd would tell you it was a preseason game as well out there at the Coliseum.
By the way, I just mentioned Tim's shows. People should know. The College Football Betting Podcast is spectacular.
Oh, it's amazing. He's the hardest working podcaster at this network.
It's great.
And that is two guys sitting here that do a podcast.
Great guest. It's great.
All I see in my email all week long is export from this podcast. And it's just over and over because Tim cares and he loves it, but loves the content. Good job, Tim.
So let's just praise Tim Murray for the next 5 minutes. Yep. It's great.
Thank you. Hey, this has been great. Appreciate it, guys. See you later. I appreciate it.
All right, let's bounce around the country here. We'll go random. Let's start with with Coach Prime and the Buffaloes heading to Georgia Tech, where the Yellow Jackets are 7-point favorites.
Yeah, I feel like this could be potentially. And now, look, it's week one. Let's dip our toe in. Don't go too crazy. We're not throwing 10-unit mega locks out there for week one. Maybe some people are. I'm not certainly going to do it. I took the 7 here with Colorado, Gil. And, you know, it's a bit of a leap of faith. You know, it feels like Colorado, as we just talked about UNC, nobody wanted to bet on UNC last week because of just everything that unfolded in year one. It's year four of Coach Prime. Things have seemingly gone sideways a little bit. They're not getting the hype that they had just a couple years ago. Very intrigued to see what this offense is going to look like. The go-go offense, they bring in Brendan Marion, a innovative offensive coordinator. He was at Sacramento State as their head coach a year ago. And more so, this is a bit of a fate of Georgia Tech for me, Gil, because, you know, they lost Buster Faulkner, their offensive coordinator. He goes to Florida. They lose Haynes King, their quarterback. It's kind of a do-everything type of quarterback for them. And they lost their backup quarterback in Aaron Filo, who followed Buster Faulkner to Florida, and he'll be the starter for the Gators. So they're going to go with Fernando Mendoza's little brother, Alberto. We'll see how good he is. Maybe he's going to shock the world like his older bro did last year. But if you're giving me a full touchdown in a game that I think probably should be lined in that 4-5 range, I'll happily take a full touchdown here with some uncertainty with the rambling wreck down in the ATL.
I will give you a full touchdown. By the way, what price would you have needed year one of Coach Prime that he would still be coaching the Buffaloes in year four?
Ooh. 15-1.
I was going to say, has to be high, right?
What's taking so long? Why isn't he in Tallahassee? Why isn't he in Tallahassee by now, Tim? What are we doing?
You should probably win football games, Kelly, in order to get a job like Florida State.
The obvious answer.
But the guy who's currently there isn't doing that, so what's the difference?
That is also true.
Tim said, look, you should probably
win. Also,
we could get into
finances down there at Florida State. They were looking around for a quarterback, and they had lots of quarterbacks come to Tallahassee, and they said, we'll give you this. They said, I will leave that door right now. See you later. Yeah. And that's why Ashton Daniels is the starting quarterback for Florida State this year.
Will Hill was on earlier. He's taking the Louisville Cardinals plus the points against Ole Miss. What are you doing?
Oh, I'm a ride with my ginger brother. Look, I am infatuated with Louisville this year. Lincoln Keenholz, an unknown. You know, as we look for the Heisman market, we do this in all sports. We try to buy low, try to buy on the unknown. And that's kind of what Lincoln Keenholz is. You know, we saw him get a start. I believe it was in the Cotton Bowl when Ohio State was, you know, had nobody playing against Missouri a couple years ago. But everything you heard about Lincoln Keenholz in Columbus when he was the backup to Julian Sain was the athleticism is off the charts. And this is just a true dynamic athlete. And now he goes to Jeff Brohm, who's a quarterback whisperer. And, you know, I think this is, to me, guys, this is the most intriguing game of week one. You know, Nashville, it's a neutral site game. You've got Ole Miss with Pete Golding now as the full-time head coach. Trinidad Chambliss comes back for another year. He was exceptional, obviously, when he took over the reins for Ole Miss when Austin Simmons got hurt. And you have Kewon Lacy, who you could argue is the best running back in college football. I just have some questions about Pete Golding being a full-time head coach. He did a great job in the, you know, immediate aftermath of Lane Kiffin. Now you've got the offseason. And Jeff Brohm, as an underdog, this is a guy you want to back. You think back to last year, guys. Two touchdown underdog at Miami. They pull off the outright upset. So once again, it's that number. You're giving me a full 7. I'll happily take it. There were some 7.5s in the offseason. Maybe we get there, but I did grab the 7. I think 7 minus 105 still out there at Circa. Because I just love backing Jeff Brohm as an underdog. And I'll tell you what, guys, I have a very long shot Heisman future on Lincoln Keenholz at 110-1 that I will look either really smart come Monday morning, or you'll be like, you bet that guy to win the Heisman Trophy? You're an idiot. We should not listen to the college football betting podcast.
Don't worry. We once bet Talia Tagovailoa for Heisman, and within 1/2, he threw 3 picks. So it could be worse.
Right before a Thursday night game.
Little Tua, come on.
We were smart
record
right before kickoff.
Record-setting quarterback for Maryland.
Were they playing Iowa? I don't know why that sounds right.
Maybe.
Oh, yeah. That was a Friday night game, Kelly. Why you got to bring that up?
Oh, there you go. That's probably what it was.
Maryland was catching 3. Oh, home dog. This would be a good spot. I think Iowa scored another touchdown just 5 minutes ago.
I think that was it.
It was like 51-3.
I think that was the game.
I think that was it.
30 seconds, Tim. It's not official Tim Murray segment without a Notre Dame Fighting Irish take. They are 3 touchdown favorites against Wisconsin.
I'll be there. My maiden voyage to Lambeau on Sunday night. Looking forward to it. Not going to lay the chalk here, but I do think, just reading the tea leaves a little bit, could be some injuries on Wisconsin's offensive line. Notre Dame, their mantra this offseason is leave no doubt. So this could be a whooping. And for Notre Dame, if they want to win the national title for the first time since 88, I think they need to make a statement on Sunday night. Not going to lay it, but I wouldn't take it either with Wisconsin.
Just go to Milwaukee, tell me no Tim Murray. Everything's free. Boom.
There you go.
No. Thank you, Tim. Appreciate it, man. Tim Murray, everybody.
See you guys.
At 1 Tim Murray. Nick Whalen joins us on the other side. Football next. Nick Whalen joins us now, courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. He is the co-host of Prop Points. The, you know, the football offseason, right?
Yep.
With Jeff Erickson. And they give way to John Hansen during the football season. But of course, he's also RotoWire senior analyst. You can follow him on Twitter at Whalen. Yes, the one replaces the L. It's Nick Whalen, everybody. How you doing, Nick?
Doing well, guys. I guess kind of the former host of Prop Points, at least for the time being. I believe the plan is for us to be back after the Super Bowl, just like we've done the last couple of years. But you can find me now on SiriusXM Monday through Thursday, 1 to 3 p.m. Eastern. So, you know, got to talk a lot of football this time of year. Eventually, Kelly, in like a month, month and a half, I think I could strong arm some NBA content onto that show. But always good to be here with you guys.
It's a platoon. It's like Renicke and Lowenstein in left field for the Orioles.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can't hit lefties.
Yeah.
There you go.
Can't hit lefties.
Okay. Future hosts of Prop Points.
Nick, how many fantasy football leagues are you in, and are you happy with all of your drafts?
Oh, boy. Man, if we're counting best ball, we're well into double digits, probably 20 plus at this point. God. But, you know, best ball is kind of a different animal. Not a lot of in-season management there, really none at all. You just do the draft and then it kind of auto-computes for you. So I have four or five more drafts that I'll be doing still before week one begins next week. A lot of those taking place over the weekend. I would say I'm actually happier than normal on balance with my drafts. I am just a card-carrying pessimist in general, especially when it comes to anything sports related. So like I usually come out of a draft and I'm thinking more about the picks I wish I would have made than the good picks I made. But for the most part, I've left most of my drafts this year feeling okay. There was one that I did a 14 teamer, which I would not advise. There's a huge difference between a 12 and a 14 team league as far as, you know, what your team looks like, how many elite players you're able to get. That one went completely awry. I have like one of the worst running back rooms I've ever assembled. I need Travis Etienne to basically have a Christian McCaffrey type of season to have any chance in that league. But overall, we're feeling okay as we get closer to week one.
Last fantasy question. Who is the one fantasy player drafted high-ish in fantasy drafts this year that you under no circumstances was going to pick because you think there is a possibility of a crash on this player, that you just don't buy into this player's success like others do?
Yeah, I mean, there's two guys for me in round one, and I was in a draft the other night, actually, where I was picking fourth, and I think I've decided that's just the worst pick. That's not where I want to be because I am not in on Puka Nacua. You know, that's kind of the obvious default Nacua spot. Most drafts, you're going to see Gibbs, Bijan, Jamar Chase in some order, and then it becomes a little bit more of a debate. You could take Jonathan Taylor. You could push up someone like James Cook. I took JSN at the 1-4, but Puka Nacua is clearly the guy with the highest ceiling at that spot. I just can't do it. And, you know, the offseason stuff is one thing. There's a potential suspension coming. I saw there was, you know, something from another ex-girlfriend that came out yesterday. Like, I have no idea what's going on off the field. It's been a terrible last few months for Nacua, but I really just worry about the style of play. I mean, he's incredibly fun to watch. He's probably the second or third best receiver in the NFL in my eyes, but it's just, he takes so many hits. He has such high usage in that Rams offense. You know, last year he was in and out of the blue medical tent. It felt like every single week. He's just somebody that I think coming off of kind of an all-time great season last year, it's going to be really tough, I think, for him to stay healthy enough to replicate that.
Nick, what is your most... Kelly and I just did our AFC power rankings yesterday. We did our NFC power rankings today. And we throw out the caveat like, hey, this is what they are. We don't know if we know anything. Maybe we're completely wrong. Maybe we're somewhat wrong. Maybe we're somewhat right. What's the biggest outlier for you, AFC, NFC, just... to the good or to the bad, who you have higher than market or lower?
I think in the NFC, I mean, I'm definitely higher on Detroit, which we've talked about, and that's not a crazy take. I think they have the four shortest odds right now to win the NFC. But I think if things break right health-wise for Detroit, I think that could be the one seed in the NFC. Maybe they need a little help from the LA Rams to get there. I'm also higher on Dallas. I know they're about 13-1 right now to win the NFC. I don't know if I'm quite that in, but I think this is a really well-coached team. You know, we've talked about Brian Schottenheimer as a potential coach of the year long shot that I think makes some sense. You know, we'll see on the Eagles if they can, you know, survive yet another coaching change in terms of an offensive coordinator, losing AJ Brown. But I think there is a path for Dallas to really have a complete season, which is something they haven't done in a while. Usually it's, you know, one side of the ball ends up being great, most often the offense. But I think they at least addressed the things they needed to address defensively. So Dallas is a team that I'm high on. And then I still can't quit the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, guys. You know, we've talked about the New Orleans Saints as a team that I like to go over their win total. I still think the NFC South runs through the Buccaneers. again, not a team to me that I feel like has Super Bowl potential. I'm not a huge Todd Bowles guy, but you look around at that division, and as much as I'm optimistic about New Orleans, I think there's a ceiling there. I'm not a big Carolina guy. Who the hell knows what's going on with Atlanta? So I think Tampa Bay is a team that we've kind of cast aside because of how they played down the stretch last season. But, you know, if we're starting to look ahead at week one, I think Tampa Bay to cover four and maybe even win outright on the road in Cincinnati is something I would look at.
Interesting. Have you bet any awards in the NFL pre-flop?
I sprinkle in on some long shots. You know, I think we've talked about, you know, Baker Mayfield, Jared Goff, some of my favorite MVP long shots. Jalen Hurts is another guy I just can't quit. I have a group chat where I'm just constantly ridiculed for defending Jalen Hurts, but, you know, around 30-35 to 1 at some shops for MVP for a guy who has a top two finish to his name. That's something that I've been looking at. You know, offensive rookie of the year, I gave out Deshaun Stribling at 33 to 1 a few weeks ago, back when I was still the host of Prop Points. And, you know, that is now down to 11 to 1. I'm not saying I feel great about it. It's some sort of lock of the century, but it's just a wide open race. I think this year, you know, you have some really talented players, but players who are not in great spots. You know, Jeremiah Love in Arizona, Jadarian Price, who looks like he might be part of a three-headed backfield now in Seattle when Charbonnet's back. Carnell Tate, who had one of the worst preseasons you could possibly have as a top five pick at wide receiver. So I think that's a market that I would keep an eye on throughout the season, because I think we're going to see that market ebb and flow really week to week because of, you know, these talented players kind of landing in bad situations. That's how you get somebody like Stribling. That's how you get somebody like Jacoby Lane, who's 15 to 1 right now in Baltimore.
I said earlier, one of the big topic sentences of the offseason for me is the quote unquote neglect of the Seattle Seahawks with all the over the top and perhaps justified love on the LA Rams. The other, the sort of the most popular bet was the Deshaun Stribling offensive rookie of the year. Like, how many people did we have made that bet?
Oh, yeah.
Multiple people, right? As soon as Ricky Pearsall went down.
Three or four.
Not went down, but they decided, well, hey, we probably should finally do surgery on this man's knee a year too late. Nick, appreciate that. Again, Nick, senior analyst over at RotoWire. Always appreciate the time. Nick, thank you.
Anytime, guys. Thanks.
I could read more tweets, but I won't, because he'll get mad, A, and B, he might have eaten at Roy Rogers in his past as well. From Pittsburgh, PA, it's Toddy Wishnev, everybody, the host, or I should say the star of Wishnev Wednesdays, the star of the Megapod, which comes back next week for week one of the National Football League. What's up, Toddy?
By all means, let's talk more about fast food when the FIBA Women's World Cup starts on Friday. All games on HBO Max. Now, I would like to take a shot at your friend Max. William Hilton trying to give me the business about being right on everything when the guy gives out the first three and first five in the Marlins game, but yet doesn't even tell you minus 120 or minus 115. How are you supposed to know? Thank you, Will, and thank you, Gil, for showing both of you your inanity. Thank you.
Todd Wishnev, everybody, at T Wishnev on Twitter. Todd, two questions. One, you're not betting the FIBA World Cup, are you, perhaps, in the WNBA?
I just found out 2 seconds ago that it's on TV, so I may, because I know a lot of these girls on a lot of these teams, because there's girls from the WNBA on all the different teams. Like, France has Gabby Williams and Maureen Johannes, and China has a bunch of girls that I know. You know, so I know these teams, so maybe I might dabble in the live if there's live.
Such an awkward break this late in the season, isn't it?
It is. I needed a break. I had run it all the way up to 21 units, and now I'm down to only up 2 units.
Oh, man.
I just totally lost my mojo in it. But, you know, what are you going to do?
What are you going to do?
Your FIBA World Cup women's outright odds. USA minus 400. France 8-1. Belgium 10-1. Australia 16-1. Everybody else 25-1 or longer.
Yeah. We're going to dominate. We, meaning us, the US of A. Todd,
question. WNBA haters like you and Will should not be saying
we're not WNBA haters. I like it. I like the league. What are you talking about?
No. I know you. I know you and Will.
Just because you hate types. Caitlin Clark, that's a whole different story. Okay.
You're probably in favor of them throwing different things on the court that are can't be said in,
I am not in
nice
favor.
Company.
That's not true. I'm sure you are. Have you eaten at Roy Rogers before? Have you in your past? Yes.
I mean, is that a serious question? Is that a serious question?
I would like the obviously that's a yes. Where's the fried chicken rank, Todd?
Is that a serious question?
Where's the fried chicken rank? Have you ever had the fried chicken?
I, you know what? I haven't eaten any of that stuff in over 5 months. My blood sugar is good. I don't even want to talk about
that's it. That's right. We don't want to put it in his head.
You know, that kind, that kind of discussion is just terrible.
That's right.
You should know better as a thin guy.
He cannot have even the discussion. He can't get, I don't want it to seep into his brain. All right, college football week zero happened last week, obviously. You are back at it, live betting college football, and you have some lessons to impart for us.
I mean, I don't know if they're lessons, but I would say that there may be some little insights into what, you know, different scenarios and stuff, which I think are interesting. You know, I wasn't watching the Robert Morris game in the first half. They were playing some, they do have ESPN Plus on a lot of these games. So I watched the second half, but I'm looking at the stats and I'm like, oh my God, these teams can't move the ball at all. So I played under 31.5 and I lost because of a defensive touchdown. Oh. But in my mind, it was the right play because, you know, typically you don't see the defensive touchdown. So that was an interesting situation. Here's one I wanted to talk about was kind of interesting. Florida State was playing New Mexico State. Okay. They're like a 30-point favorite. And this is where, when you watch a lot of games and you look at a lot of statistics, you can start to glean insight. What are the stats supposed to look like in a game where it's 31-point spread? You know, what you should know what it's supposed to look like, okay? I'm watching the game. You're looking for midway second quarter Florida State to be averaging 9 or 10 yards a play because they can't be stopped even in the slightest bit. And you're looking for the other team probably to be averaging 2 yards a play. That's kind of what it should look like. It didn't look like that because New Mexico State was moving the ball, and Florida State was moving the ball, but they're only averaging like 7.5 yards a play. Score was 17-7. I said to myself, for sure, New Mexico State team total is the correct thing to play over. Now, why do I say that? The pregame was 53 and Florida State 31. Now, if you don't know how to do a pregame team total from just knowing the spread, you take half of the total, which is, call it 54 to make it easy. 27 is half. And if the spread is 30, let's say, that's 15 for each way. So that's 27 plus 15 is 42. 27 minus 15 is 12, half of the 30-point spread, right? And you get a team total 42-12. That's where what you're looking for is a 30-point spread on a 54 total. 42-12 is what the team totals are going to be around because that's, if you add it up, that's 30, and that's 54, right? 42 plus 12 is 54.
The confluence of spread and total, yes.
Mm-hmm. Right. So you know pregame, people are looking for New Mexico State to score 12, and they're looking for Florida State to score around 42. So it's 17-7 midway, maybe a little bit into the second quarter, and I see New Mexico State's moving it at about 4.5 yards a play. They really shouldn't be moving that well. They are. I'm like, I got to get on this over on it because I know New Mexico State is going to score. Now, I thought, should I play New Mexico State team total or should I play just the total of the game, which was right around 52 at that point? I thought to myself, well, Florida State isn't averaging 9 yards a play, but still 7.5 yards a play. They'll probably continue to score, especially in the second half. And I know New Mexico State's going to score. So I'm just going to play the total of the full game. Ended up, I played like over 53. I think New Mexico State did score. And had I played their team total, which I think at that point was maybe around 14.5 or something, they ended up with 17. And I believe Florida State had 34, something around there. But the point is I outsmarted myself because I played the full game total instead of the team total New Mexico State, which I really liked. But I thought to myself, hey, it's probably better just to do the full game total because you're going to get in New Mexico scores and Florida State sooner or later is going to start to roll. That was my theory. And I lost by 2 points, but would have won the New Mexico State side. The point that I'm trying to make, I guess, is go ahead.
No, I was going to say, no, finish your thought and I'll have follow up. The point you're trying to make
the point that I was that I'm trying to make is if you watch enough of these games, you know what a 30-point underdog statistic should look like in the second quarter.
It's an awesome
and
point.
I knew that New Mexico State was moving the ball too much to have a team total that low.
Okay.
Similarly, USC as well. USC had a similar game with San Jose State. San Jose State was moving the ball too much to have such a low total. I don't remember exactly what it was, but it was very low.
Okay. Here's my one follow-up. to the person who bets in game or is an aspiring in game better who likes what you're saying, but would have this question, would say, yeah, that makes sense, Todd, but why wouldn't I think, I understand what you're saying, but why wouldn't I conversely think, oh yeah, that's what's happened. This ought to regress to the mean. In other words, it ought to regress to what the preflop number is. Wouldn't the counter to that counter be, we don't know what these teams are yet. So there is, like, how can you even know what regression to the mean even means at that point?
But also, I think that I've watched enough of these games to know that if 20 minutes into the game, if New Mexico State was moving the ball as well as they were, now, I'm not saying they were moving the ball great, but they were moving it, you know, and maybe averaging 4.5 yards a play. That's not going to regress. That should not even be happening, period. Okay, in that kind of game. The fact that it's happening at all, it's only going to get worse for Florida State because as they get further ahead, they're going to put in second and third string, and that team might even move the ball more, which is what we saw in San Jose State. Early on, they only had the one touchdown, and then late, they put on a bunch of touchdowns because they could move it a bit against USC's first team. They could move it a lot against USC's second and third team defense. So I don't think the regression happens as much in scenarios like that.
Always fascinating. Todd Wishnev, everybody. Is the Discord open or are you full still?
I think we're full. I mean, we might have some spots. I'm not sure yet. I haven't figured that out.
Stay tuned on that. Thank you, Todd. Todd Wishnev, everybody, at T Wishnev. Thanks. Mark Borchardt joins us now, courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. You may know him better as Base Winner. You can follow all his stuff at Base Winner, basewinner.com. He joins us now from an undisclosed location somewhere in the desert back where he lives. How you doing, Mark?
I'm doing great. Yeah, Ely, Nevada, not a bad place, actually. The weather's better in the summer. It was beautiful up there when I stayed the night there what the hell was that place called? The Ponderosa Hotel Casino, oh, wow. A dog-friendly casino. Nice. And so it was pretty cool. And they have, you know, I'm a big track and field guy. I do master's track. And they have White Pine High School has a brand new, I mean, they must have spent at least $1 million on that track. It's a great facility. I'm thinking about, you know, Weingarten used to say, hey, we're going to have a handicapper headquarters, like a camp, a compound.
A compound, you know?
And
yeah.
I think that the handicapper compound up would really work well. So I got down 1,400 miles driving with dogs and a pack Land Cruiser. I really saw the West Coast. That's what I got to say, Gil, right?
You said in there, I don't want to let this slide. You said you're a big fan of track and field. What event did you used to do in track and field that we found so amusing?
Well, I actually train for the pentathlon. So it's the first event, it's a long jump, and then the javelin, 200 meters, discus, and 1500 meters. So yeah, that's one of the things I do outside of handicapping that I'm super serious about, you know, for a 56-year-old guy.
I was going to say, what leads one in that direction? When do you wake up and say, you know what I'd like to do today? I'd like to throw a javelin or learn how to. When did that start?
Well, I've always liked to run. There's a really nice talk about a great facility at Paradise Valley College here in Scottsdale or outside of Scottsdale, and so I've always run and sprinted. And a couple of years ago, I started the long jump, and then I thought, well, you know what? I can throw the javelin. I did it a little bit when I was in my 30s, the pentathlon, and I said, well, I can go back and do that. So I love being outdoors, Gil. You're sitting on a computer all day, grinding numbers, writing code, and handicapping. It's nice to get out and get some fresh air.
You ever done the steeplechase, Mark, where you're hurtling into water?
No, I don't, but I have a really good friend, Flash, who actually went to the World Masters. His name's Flash, and he's really good. And he went to the World Masters Championship. It was in, you know, you would like this, South Korea. Daegu, is that how you pronounce it? Yeah, that's where he went.
Why would I love South Korea? Ago. What are you trying to say? I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I think you vacation there. I think that you love.
I've been there once. I may know a Korean. Yes. Yeah. Okay.
Yes. Okay. Yep.
Oh. We're just waiting for you to continue now. Mark, was that the end of Flash's story?
Flash went to Korea. He won the steeplechase for, I think that he's 45 to 49 age group, and he won it. It was a good race. I'm very proud of him.
Didn't Boss Hogg and Dukes of Hazzard call his little basset hound Flash, I believe? I think that's what I picked every
Mark,
time.
Mark, have you ever, sorry, but we talked to Drew Dinsick once a week.
Yeah.
Like, have you ever handicapped track and field? Like, have you ever bet this during the Olympics or anything?
Yes, I actually have a really good friend, and I can't disclose who it is because he told me never disclose who the friend is. And he actually, at Bookmaker, they had they were the only available lines, and he was really good. He would do the Diamond League and the Olympics, and they ended up taking the markets off. He's like, I'll give you the place, but you got to monitor how much you bet because they're going to know it's me. I'm like, okay, and I did, I will tell you guys who it is off air, but I can't do it on air because I vowed secrecy to the guy.
Love it, I love that.
Does it rhyme with Mason Mine Martin?
No, okay. No. Very well. I can't. I don't want to get. I'll tell you guys. Off there. Yeah.
Okay. What'd you land on in baseball today, Mark? What are you betting?
Well, you know, today this is going to be the best parlay for Fezzik in the history of parlays. It's the Yankees Dodgers, a money line parlay.
Let's go.
And, I mean, if that's as blue blood and square as it can be, that's it. But you know, the numbers line up here. I've got the Yankees with Schlittler. I got them about minus 201, and they're in the market about minus 160. So I think that's a good play. And then Yamo will be there today, Gil, I think. The Dodgers minus 240, I think they should be closer to minus 300. You know, this Dodger team has been very sketchy as of late. I've bet this, and I'm going to do this too. Team total Dodgers over 2.5. You can get that at minus 108. I think it should be about minus 134 to be precise, based on the run projection and the Poisson calculator. I would put those together in a parlay. I'd bet both of them on the run line too. You can get them both on the run line about even money, Gil.
Okay. You have a straight bet for us so that Fezzik doesn't lose his mind?
Yeah, let's do this one. I think you'll appreciate this bet. Baltimore minus 1.5, minus 105. Bring back some childhood memories for Mr. Gill.
Yeah.
And Sugano is the worst guy on the board today from a hits per plate appearance, total bases per plate appearances allowed. League average is 0.36. He's at 0.475. There's only five pitchers that are worse than him, and I think four of them have been released. So that's a good sign for the Orioles.
Wasn't Sugano the guy that, like, if you blindly tailed the Rockies when he pitched, of any starting pitcher in baseball, you made the most money backing him too? Wasn't he the guy?
I think you're right. He's one of those guys, you know, and E-Rod the same way. We talked about him a couple weeks ago where all the sabermetrics are terrible, and they caught up to him last night. But, I mean, he was just pitching outside of his ASS from a sabermetric standpoint, and so that caught up with him. And I think that, you know, you can – some of these guys are villains, though, Gil. Like, remember Martin Perez a couple years ago, and you would say, Chris Young, go way back in the day – Chris Young Royals.
Dude, and Chris Young, I used to bet that dude, 6'10". I think he's now the GM of the Rangers, isn't he? But he's Chris Young.
Chris Young,
when he pitched, man, I used to bet on him because his saber metrics were just led me to it, and he would win more often than not. He would get the job done. But yeah, there's littered with guys. When you bring up Martin Perez, though, I'm just thinking to myself, how are we still betting on this guy in 2026? Amazing. He's still playing.
It's crazy. You know, these guys, he's one of them, an anomaly. And Blackburn, when he pitched with the A's, was the same way. I think he's out of the league right now. Last I checked, he was in the bullpen for the Yankees, but I think that they released him. But, you know, you have these guys who have really poor sabermetrics, but they continue to win. And that's the way Sugano is, and it leads you to a philosophical question: how long are you going to play the sabermetrics versus you know, what the guys produce, right?
Yeah. Okay. Two questions here before you go. One: did you come up with any team for the month of September as your favorite?
Oh, I do, Gil. I actually have three teams, and
congratulations!
I'll give you the exact percentages, Gil.
Okay.
I got the Dodgers as of today, and this updates every day for me. I've made this application. I'll have to share it with you. It's really cool. But they're 30.3% to win the month of September. So that should be plus 231. You can get them at DraftKings plus 320. Mm-hmm. Philly, again, got me there last month.
Congratulations.
13. Yeah, it was great. What a fun time. And I wrote about it as the, if you guys want to see like a fun success story about the month simulations, go to my site, read my post, because it was a real good journey. But I've got them, they should be plus 625. They're in the market right now at plus 1200. And then the third team that's showing value is the Guardians. I've got them 11.2% to win. So plus 793 would be the right price, the fair price for me. And they're plus 1400. So I think that those three teams are the ones that are showing value. And real quick, I'm waiting for these division winner monthly markets, because I actually have the application handicaps those too. And shout out to a couple of people who actually listen to me. You know, Bob Geddes, I think is how you pronounce his last name. He tweets on your show a lot. Mm-hmm. He got the Astros at 14-1. I think I gave that out maybe a week before the season, or before the month ended, or maybe 10 days or something like that. So I'm waiting for these division markets. I don't know if DraftKings is going to put them out. They did about maybe on the third or the fourth of the month last month. So I'm waiting for that. And hopefully we'll be able to talk about those as well, Gil.
Last question, 30 seconds. We went over World Series matchups earlier on the show. What would be a World Series matchup that you would be interested in seeing how it's priced if you could bet it right now?
I'm showing like Tampa Bay maybe, and I have to look at the prices. I know I would say maybe Tampa Bay, like a Tampa Bay Philly would be a good one.
35 to 1. 35 to 1. Does that interest you? Might that be something that might interest you?
I'd have to run the math though. But each team to win the World Series, I have, and so like it's just basically a multiplication of both those teams. So, okay. But that would be right off the top of my head. Yeah.
Mark Borchardt, everybody. Thank you, Mark. Congratulations on the Phillies again in August.